I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, this is Ian Lee. Thank you so much for downloading Ian Lee's Random Access Memories, a retro gaming podcast. Do check out the Patreon, patreon.com/IanLee, IanLee. And also go to my YouTube channel and look for the Random Access Memories there. Again, it's youtube.com/IanLee. Thanks for downloading.
I'm ready.
One, two, three, clap. Right.
Nice.
Nice, smooth. No one needs to know this is our second attempt at doing this because my internet died. It can be just our little secret. I'm joined this week by Reese. I don't know your last name. I just know you as Control Alt Reese. I have just cut the bit out. I've just cut the bit out where Reese tells us his name.
You will
never know it. I know it. I might reveal it for cash, but you will never know it. So you're a podcaster, you're a YouTuber. I will cut that bit out, Reese. Don't worry. You're a podcaster and you're a YouTuber. And so you go under the name of Control Alt Reese. Is that right?
I do. That's right.
How did you stumble upon that? It's a great name.
I actually first started on Instagram and I was posting a lot of stuff on my personal account, posting the usual sort of holiday photos and pet photos and pictures of my breakfast and, usual Instagram stuff. And I started posting pictures of my projects on there, my electronics projects and computer restoration things. And I started to pick up quite a lot of followers off the back of that. And it got very weird because obviously I was posting like holiday photos and things on there for my family and friends. And then I had random strangers also commenting on them. So I decided to split it up into a separate thing. And it was actually a friend of mine. We kind of been chatting with some friends and saying, what do I call this thing? And the name Control Alt Reese came up. So I used that name on Instagram, still do use that for a while. And then that kind of became the name of the YouTube channel when I started on there as well. So
describe, yeah. I'm a big fan of your channel. I've only just discovered it recently in the last few months. I absolutely love it. I'm not a very technical person, but I love seeing people opening old consoles and old computers and cleaning them, recapping, pointing out different chips. I don't know what any of this stuff is, but I find it really, really satisfying. It's like an ASMR for me. Do you want to describe what your channel is and how people find it, and also what they will see if they come and have a look?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty much that, like you say, taking old consoles and computers apart and cleaning them up and fixing them. I do like documentary type videos as well, bits of computer history, that kind of thing. My interest kind of primarily is in Atari history because my kind of earliest gaming experiences were with the Atari 2600 and with the ST. So I collect Atari stuff. I've got everything from kind of the earliest 1970s Pong and TV console things all the way up to like the Jaguar and the last stuff that they did in the 90s. So there's kind of a focus on that, but it's a mixture of that 90s PC gaming stuff, anything that kind of takes my interest, really.
I don't know your age. You don't need to tell it if you don't want, but you look significantly younger than me. And I'm guessing, and I could be wildly off track here, but I'm guessing you missed the Atari 2600. That was the kind of one with the wooden paneling, wasn't it? I guess you missed that first time around, did you?
Well, I mean, I'm 40 in a couple of months, so okay, I'm not
dear listener, he's looking very, very good for 40, let's just say. Okay.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. But yeah, I think it was, it would have been sort of 1988, 89. I would have been sort of 4 or 5 years old. And yeah, it was at my cousin's house. It was at my uncle's house for Christmas. And we had the whole family around. And he'd actually got the 2600 Junior for Christmas, which would have been a bit long in the tooth by then. But Atari were still selling them. I think they sold them till like 92 or something like that. And my very earliest gaming memory was playing on that all day, Christmas Day. He had two games, which were Keystone Capers and Frogger was the other one. And we literally just played the same two games all the, you know, for the rest of the day. So that's my origin story, so to speak, with the Atari and stuff.
How important was gaming growing up for you?
Oh yeah, well, I wasn't a recluse. I wasn't a nerd. I didn't spend all my time sort of locked away in my bedroom playing games. You know, I had a bike and I went out. You know, we live in quite a rural area, so I was always out and about and stuff. But after that, my parents got me an Acorn Electron, secondhand one, which came from a friend of my dad's, and I remember playing some games on that. But the first computer that I sort of properly got that was actually mine was the Atari STE in 91, 92-ish, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I kind of dabbled with programming. I'm a developer in my day job now, trying to make my own games and stuff, doing like animations and.
Okay.
Obviously, I played a lot of games growing up, but I was kind of more into kind of using it for like the creative side of things, I guess. That's kind of something that's kind of followed through my whole life with the videos and the blogging and everything else.
I used to be very proud. I'm 50, so I'm a bit older than you. And I was of the generation where we had a room that was full of BBC micros. Mm. And I was very proud that I wrote a program that would convert from, I don't know, centigrade to Fahrenheit whatever it could do that. That was very cool. And I was also really good at writing quizzes. And this is what we used to do, you know, in the 80s for entertainment is mum would go shopping, do the Saturday shop in Slough. I would go into a push WH Smith's, but I preferred Boots, where they had the rows of different computers. And I would spend 20 minutes writing a quiz. And it would be, hi, what's your name? Oh, hi, Reese. Would you like to play a quiz? Well, here are the questions. God knows how I did it. I would have absolutely no idea how to do it now. But even at that really, really simple level, it was such a gas to type that in and then step back and watch someone go, oh, there's a quiz on the computer. I'll have a go at that. I used to absolutely love that. And I would imagine, do you get what's the buzz you get from your job knowing that people are using, playing the stuff that you're making?
Yeah, well, I didn't end up going into game development in the end, which I think ended up actually being quite a wise decision with the way that things have gone quite recently, unfortunately. But yeah, the stuff that I do, it's complicated, but I do.
And I'm not very clever, so okay.
Yeah, probably the most impressive thing is kind of interactive installations for people like Samsung and Philips and Sony, so in-store demos and stuff like that. So there is an interactive element to it. I have done some game-like things with the Microsoft Kinect and, you know, people dancing around and it takes pictures of you and then you can print them out afterwards and that kind of thing as kind of a promotional thing. But yeah, as far as actual game development goes, things didn't quite go to plan as far as that was concerned. It's not really something I've ever kind of got into, much as I would love to.
I have been broadcasting for over 20 years. I kind of stop now. I do this and a couple of other little things. I have never stopped being amazed that some people would choose to listen to me hosting a radio show, hosting a podcast. I never get it. I'm wondering how you feel about your channel, because you get really, really good numbers. And I'm wondering how you feel about that, how you react when you make a piece and you put it out and people watch it and enjoy it.
It's scary, quite frankly.
Scary.
I mean, I've been making videos for years and silly little like stop motion animations and that kind of stuff. And I'll show them to my friends, five people in a room, and that would kind of be the end of it. And I'd kind of move on. And it obviously the YouTube thing's kind of a much more recent thing for me. When it was 2019, I started. And I guess I kind of knew that people would take interest in it and it would kind of take off. But I wouldn't have dreamed that I'd have 26,000 subscribers 4 years later. And I recently did a video that got 100,000 views. I've had
Wow.
others. Obviously, there's the infamous solar stuff. I don't know if you want to go into that, but
I
those were
don't
kind of
know this. What's
massively
the solar
successful.
stuff?
But
What's that?
oh, it's a thing that's kind of something that my long-term viewers will be familiar with. I made an infamous and now infamous video about solar panels. So I bought an off-grid solar kit and I kind of put it together and kind of set it up at the back of my house. And I was running computers and various things with it. Made a video about that. Didn't even think twice about it. I thought, if anything, I thought, well, my viewers are only interested in old computer stuff, so they're not really going to take much interest in this. So, but I was doing it, so I thought I'll turn the camera on and I'll record it and I'll make a bit of a video about this project. And within a couple of months, it had got nearly 1 million views on YouTube,
Wow.
and it was insane. And unfortunately, being a complete newcomer to the world of solar, which I did make very clear in the video, I did make a couple of sort of quite fundamental mistakes with it. So I had a load of people in the comments c calling me out on that. I had a load of people contacting me, joining my Discord server, emailing me, commenting on the video, asking me for help and advice in setting up their own solar power systems, which of course I'm not qualified to do. So I actually took that video down. I
Oh.
did a couple of follow-ups that weren't sort of nearly as successful. And I ended up taking the whole lot down because it was just dominating everything that I was doing. I had people asking me solar questions left, right, and center, and it was just madness. So decided to kind of refocus on the computer stuff. And I think anyone who's kind of a professional YouTuber probably thinks I'm mad because obviously those videos were successful and they were growing
Yeah.
the channel and they were making money and ad revenue and stuff. But it was a one-off project and it's not where my interests lie. So I didn't like it kind of dominating everything that I was doing.
You didn't want to become Reese the solar panel guy.
No. A wiser man than me probably would have set up another channel and kind of done solar stuff on that because I was getting sent stuff by sponsors and like
Wow.
power pack things and people offering to send me complete solar setups and stuff if I reviewed them on the channel. And obviously it was like, well, I built this thing, it kind of does the job that I want it to do. That's as far as I want to take it. But very very strange time for my channel. But
I think the thing about art, and an artist is you have to do what you want to do. There is that thing. Do you chase the numbers? Do you chase the things that maybe you don't want to talk about, but there are big numbers? Or do you go with your heart and your passion? And you might get numbers, you might not get numbers. And I think for me anyway, that's become an important thing. Sounds like that's a similar attitude that you have.
I mean, this isn't my day job, and I'm very fortunate in my day job that obviously being self-employed, I'm quite flexible with my time. And I can't really ever see a day where I'd want to be a full-time YouTuber. I think turning a hobby into a job is probably it's kind of going to suck some of the fun out of it. So I'd like to keep it as a part-time thing and kind of, if it turns into like a some kind of second income or whatever, then that's great. But first and foremost, it's just about making videos and kind of showing people stuff that I'm working on at any given moment.
We will get to your game in a bit, and this is the first episode of these I've done where I don't know what your game is. I'm looking forward to finding out. But very
Okay.
quickly, the last I've watched a couple, the last couple of Reese Rambles, and I think we have a very similar kind of taste. Talking about tubes versus pipes, the difference between a tube and a pipe. And the reason I say that is years ago, if ever I, whenever I was doing a radio show, if ever I got stuck, someone called in and asked this once, and we got so many calls. What's the difference between a boat and a ship? And it would
Oh.
you just say that and you get, well, it's the size. And then you look, actually, it's not. It's a very difficult
Oh.
thing to define. It's not the size. I still never quite found the answer as to what is the difference. You did
Interesting.
definitively get the difference between tubes and pipes.
I did. An actual civil engineer got involved and gave me
I love
the
it.
definitive answer. One of my regular supporters and viewers. slash listeners. So yeah, Reese Rambles is kind of the podcast. It's kind of a bit of a side project for me. And yeah, it's basically any kind of weird rambling thoughts that I happen to have at any given moment. And like you say, the pipes versus tubes was one of them. The reason for that is because one of the places that I actually work in my day job has a pipe slash tube warehouse slash factory across the road. So every day I was parking in this car park and walking past this big sign that said, you know, company name pipes and tubes. And it really got me thinking about what, you know, what is the difference between a pipe and a tube? And you look into their yard and they've got like all these big things on reels and they've got pallets full of these big pipes, and it's like, you know, what's the difference? So the difference between a pipe and a tube, anyway, is that the pipe basically describes the physical shape of the thing. No, that's not right. That's the wrong way around. A tube is the physical shape of the thing, a cylindrical hollow thing. But it becomes a pipe when you transport a liquid or a gas through it. But also, this led on to a kind of a follow-on debate about conduit and ducts. And if you run a cable through it and it's above ground, then it's technically called a conduit. But if it's underground, then it's called a duct. But yeah, it's still a pipe slash tube. So. But yeah, I'm still trying to get all of that straight in my head. But these are the kind of conversations that we end up having on Reese Rambles. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. We should probably mention the game that you brought. So the idea of this podcast, Random Access Memories, is I invite someone to come on and talk about a retro game. I leave the term retro completely open to their interpretation. I don't define it by years or consoles or anything like that. So what have you brought and why?
So, having discussed all of the Atari stuff in great detail, you probably think I'm going to pick an Atari game.
I think you're going to pick an Atari game.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm going to pick
Oh,
Doom.
okay.
Yeah, I'm going to
Doom
pick Doom.
on which particular system, or just Doom in general?
On the PC, the original version. So we got our first PC in 1994.
Cool.
Christmas 94, and it was a 486 DX266. I remember it really well. It's from a company called Tiny. I don't know if you remember them.
I do remember Tiny, although I think maybe perhaps I'm confusing them with Time, which was
There was
another.
also Time. Yeah, that's the
Time appeared on
confusing thing.
Watchdog.
And they both had little shops on the high street, didn't they? But they
Yes.
were completely separate, competing companies with very
Okay.
confusing similar names. And it came with the shareware episode of Doom on it, which obviously had come out in 93, like the year before. And I just remember just playing it, just entire Christmas, just hogging the PC, the brand new family PC, just tucked away in a corner. Because obviously, back in those days, you had like the computer desk where it was all set up with the desktop PC and the speakers and the printer on the shelf underneath and everything else. And yeah, literally just spending the entirety of that Christmas and New Year period just playing the shareware episode of Doom over and over again,
So you'd have
as
been
you
what,
do.
four, 13, 14?
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
What, I mean, Doom is an amazing game, and Doom stands the test of time very, very well, you know. And some of the remakes I really enjoyed as well. I imagine, what was it about it at that time for you that caught your imagination and became so addictive?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think because, like I mentioned, I've had the Atari ST before, and it was all kind of platformers and racing games and that kind of thing. And, yeah, then I remember reading the ST magazines, and they had all the screenshots of like the Jaguar games and stuff that were quite big at the time. And there was this big push for kind of 3D and virtual reality, as they were calling it at the time. And then all of a sudden, we had this PC with this game, and it just blew me away. It just kind of sucks you into this whole, you know, proper immersive 3D world. Obviously, you look back at it now, and it's graphically, I guess a lot of people who didn't play it at the time are probably thinking it was looks a bit sort of primitive compared to modern stuff. But I think it's actually held up really well. I think as a complete package, as a, you know, a design and a coherent thing, it's just, and obviously the gameplay and the sound design and everything else. And it's just, yeah, I mean, best game of all time, I'd probably say.
I went to a retro gaming event. The last year, 2023, I've really got into retro gaming in a big way in terms of watching channels, watching your channel, watching Neil at RMC Retro, some of the American ones, although a lot of the American retro people, there's a lot of beef going around there. They're all they're all doing their videos, and then they go, I just want to spend 10 minutes to slag off, you know, XYZ gamer. If there is someone called XYZ gamer, I do apologize. I'm using it as a generic term.
I don't think
And then they'll spend 10 minutes really just laying into this person. And then someone else will do a, like a reply. Recently on someone's channel, they called me up for this. Well, here are the facts. And I'm thinking, oh, I just want to watch you talk about games consoles. It's very... You're never tempted to be drawn into beef wars or anything like that, are you?
I like to avoid drama. I mean, yeah, there's a couple of things I've talked about on Reese Rambles that have been sort of current goings on, but it's always kind of a step back and a kind of balanced look at it and try to explain it for people who aren't familiar with it. But no, I'd never go out there and say, oh, you know, this person's an idiot and stuff like that. It's not worth it.
No, it isn't. As I get older, the older I get, the more I think, oh, God, no, don't say that. But just anyway. So 2023 was the year I really got back into retro gaming. I write a column for Retro Gamer magazine, and I've really dived back into it. And I've been to a few events. I went to Crash and a couple of others. But I went to, I can't remember what it's called now, the one in Blackpool anyway, that's huge. Play Expo, that's it. And I went there for the weekend. I had such a great time. It was so much fun. You know, some people recognized me and they would come and chat to me about stuff. You know, I got to meet so many interesting kind of guests and speakers and things like that. And one of the people giving a talk there was the guy that designed Doom. Is it John Romano? Is that his name?
John Romero.
Yep. Thank you very much. This American guy with this lovely long flowing hair, and he gave a talk, and he must have been talking about Doom forever, right?
Yeah.
The enthusiasm that it must have been the millionth time he stood in front of a crowd and talked about it, but the enthusiasm was dripping off him. The love for this industry, this, you know, this work that has survived this long that he was talking about. He's a remarkable character. Have you ever met him or seen him give a talk?
I've never actually met him, no. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. So Doom was made by John Romero and John Carmack, and they couldn't be any different character-wise. So right. John Carmack's a very kind of nerdy, very focused on the code, you know, and he's absolutely revolutionary programmer. He's a legendary programmer. But he's very much kind of moved on with his life, and he's doing VR stuff now, and he's always been kind of very sort of future looking, whereas John Romero is kind of the more rock star guy with the long hair and the, you know, drives a Ferrari, and he loves Doom, and he still loves it all these years later. And like you say, he talks very passionately about it. He actually makes episodes, he still makes full kind of retail box episodes for Doom. There's one called Sigil that came out, I think, 2022, and there's actually a follow-up to that, Sigil 2, which is supposedly going to be arriving sort of any day now. I did pre-order both of those. But yeah, he is a real character, and he's definitely someone I'd like to meet someday. And I do have, you know, original box copies and stuff. And if I did get the chance, I'd definitely take them along and say, you know, can you sign these, please? You know, like a fanboy, proper fanboy.
He had a little stall up, and he was selling a book, and he was signing stuff, and he was chatting to people. And I got too nervous to go and talk to him. Now, I have been lucky enough. I've traveled the world, and I've met, you know, Shigeru Miyamoto and Al Alcorn I can't remember the name of the guy that made Pac-Man. Anyway, I've met all of these, you know, so many people. And for some reason, I couldn't go up to John and go, hey, John, I just want to say I'm a really big fan. You know, I suddenly became this very nervous, geeky 14-year-old that still resides within me. And I couldn't go and speak to him. You'd be okay with it. You're okay with stuff like that, are you?
I don't know.
Doesn't bother you at all.
He seems like quite a, he'd be quite an intimidating presence in real life. I know he still plays a lot of Doom as well. I know if you actually challenge him to a Doom deathmatch, he will actually sit down and play you. And to be honest, I don't think many people have actually managed to beat him over the years. I think he's actually pretty legendary at the game itself as well. So, yeah.
He played someone on this. I think there was a tournament challenge, John, and he's just like destroying everyone. The last guy did get him down. It was 1 point between them, but he was just destroying them. Do you go to many of these retro events?
I don't actually. Yeah, I don't.
Right.
It's weird. I don't really go to the big ones. I would like to at some point, but there's always something else going on. Last year I went to one called Kickstart, which was like a big Amiga show up in
Okay.
Nottingham. It was the very first year that they'd done it, and I'm not an Amiga guy at all, but it was right on my doorstep, and quite a lot of people that I kind of know in real life were involved, and were exhibiting there and stuff. And yeah, I loved that. I had an amazing time at that. And I'm probably, and this is a bit of a scoop and a bit of insider info, I'm more than likely going to be exhibiting at some form, in some form or other, at this year's Kickstart event, which
Oh,
would be quite fun
fantastic.
for the very first time ever. But yeah, but as far as the big ones go, like Play Expo and stuff, I've always wanted to go to them. And then yeah, like I say, we're either on holiday or something else has come up. But maybe this year, maybe.
Play Expo is fun. It's really, really nice. And I love Blackpool. I love British seaside resorts out of season. I just think there's something romantic about them. But I was staying in a hotel. It had the Queen. It was, I won't name the thing for fear of embarrassing it, but it was the Queen's something. No way would the Queen want to stay. They had stains on the ceiling. There were stains on the ceiling. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, I was in my very uncomfortable bed, and there were people talking really, really loudly, like effing and jeffing out on the balcony. And it went on for about 10 minutes. And then someone in the room next door to me started shouting, "Will you bleep him bleep? You're waking my bleeping baby." And I'm thinking, oh my God. It was some experience. It was some experience. So let's go back to Doom. So you're playing it as a 13, 14-year-old young man. It's kind of a leap from the Atari ST up to that. What was it about that game in particular that got you so excited?
I think I really like the sound design in it. Like, as you were wandering around, like if you kind of gone through a bit of a level and kind of killed everything, and you were sort of wandering around trying to work out where to go next, there's this constant kind of low level like grunting and stuff that was going on that you could kind of just about hear off in the distance, and it was like it was scary. I'd never really experienced anything like that from a game before, and obviously parts of it are sort of really dark and stuff. And and obviously the music. I mean, I'm a big kind of rock music fan, and I kind of grew up listening to, we had all like the classic rock stuff in our house when I was growing up. So, and the soundtrack to that game, obviously, is all sort of heavily inspired by all that kind of stuff as well. So, yeah, I think it was a big influence on that side of things.
And of course, it set the template for so many of those games where you're walking around a dungeon shooting people and upgrading your weapons. It can be traced back to that, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was Wolfenstein 3D, which they'd done
Right.
before that, which was kind of a more sort of primitive, like proto Doom. Still, amazing game, especially for some of the really sort of low level, really limited hardware that it actually runs on. I mean, I use it to test PCs and stuff. But Doom was, I think, kind of the first time that someone kind of got everything all right together in one sort of complete package. And yeah, like I say, massively influential as well.
Having a PC, we didn't get our first PC. I was living with my friend Mackenzie. We were doing a TV show together. Listen to my glamorous lifestyle. And we got our first PC 1998. That was Time Computers. And it was we could never get the printer to connect. And then after we bought it, they did appear on, I think they bust now, so I can say this. They appeared on Watchdog as being not particularly good computers. But yeah, we were kind of late 1998, and the internet was this, oh my God, you speak to kids now, they can't imagine a world without the internet or without mobile phones. But we saw that develop. Was it just games for you on there? Were you also kind of surfing the net and looking around the world on the internet?
Yeah. So, well, that's a whole story. I remember being at school, and this would have been sort of 95, 96-ish. I think it would have been about 15, 16, something like that. I'm terrible at maths, but yeah, it would have been about 95, 96-ish. But I remember the IT teacher just saying, you know, does anyone have access to the internet at home? And it was me and one other kid who stuck our hands up in a class of like 30 kids. Mm. And that was the point where I kind of realized, oh, you know, we're kind of really early to this thing, because my dad actually worked for an American company at the time, and they insisted that he had email. And so he had to have internet access at home. And I remember that same computer sat in the corner of the living room. You know, I used to ask my parents, oh, can I go on the internet? And I'd be allowed half an hour, and I'd kind of go and sit and dial up to AOL and then kind of go onto the chat rooms and chat to people, or, you know, look at the news, have a poke around. And like my dad used to bring like the .NET magazines from over from America, because obviously he was over there on business quite a lot. And they actually had listings in there, and, you know, new websites to check out this month. And they'd have like featured websites. And I used to like have the magazine open and kind of type it into the browser. And then you spend like 2 minutes poking around and then, you know, sort of move on to the next one. And it was all like, and then obviously like, you know, started to get like animated GIFs and then like MIDI music playing in the background. And then there was like Real Player, where you could start streaming video at like one frame per second in a postage size stamp. And yeah, all of that. I grew up with all of that stuff. And then obviously Napster with the music piracy, and obviously I didn't personally partake in any of that, but it was amazing just to see how it all kind of evolved in such a short space of time. And
my kids are going to be 12 and 14 very soon, and I'm going to play them this, because I'm aware that we sound like old people talking about hoops and sticks, you know about playing hopscotch and things like that, but this is within our lifetime, you know, that this stuff actually happened. And you talked about the dial-up, and it would be that thing. You'd be on the internet, suddenly it would drop, and you'd realize someone had picked the phone. It's like, put the phone down, I'm on the internet. I'm playing Half-Life was the one for me that really got me. But playing Half-Life online, and it would have been about 2000 maybe, or something like that, 2000, 2001, seeing that changed everything for me, even though it was glitchy. And I remember, you know, you kind of spawn in midair sometimes.
Yep. I remember it well.
Playing that and with other people, that's when I thought, oh my God, anything is possible now. Anything is possible.
You see, I nearly actually picked Half-Life as my game, and then I thought, okay, No, that's not retro, that's far too modern. But actually, it's like over 20 years old now. So, it's just that I'm old.
I was very, very lucky in that I was gifted a Steam Deck, which is a wonderful thing to be gifted. And, you know, this incredibly powerful machine that can do anything. The first game I downloaded was Half-Life. Mm. So I'll have a little go on that. And this is really going to put it through its paces. You make videos about consoles. Are you still a gamer? Are you still playing?
I don't have a current gen. Well, I say that there is a Switch in the house, but that's kind of my wife's. But no, I don't have the last current gen console I had was an Xbox 360. Had the original Xbox and the Wii and stuff back in the day. But I'm more on the PC side of things.
Right.
But to be honest, even then, it's all retro stuff. It's like the remasters of, you know, Quake and Quake 2 and all those kind of old 90s FPS games. Kind of starting to get big again, so just been sort of playing my way through those again, really.
And one other thing, we're talking about recapping. I still don't really know what recapping is, and soldering and clean. I love it when someone takes apart a dirty console and puts it in soapy water and scrubs it with a toothbrush. Now I'm ADHD, and my mind is constantly racing a million miles an hour, a million different thoughts, and I think there's part of why I like this stuff so much is it's like a meditation for me. It's like a breathing exercise. It's very slow. It's very gentle. You have a beginning. You have a dirty console that doesn't work. You have an ending. Hopefully you have a clean console and you get the pleasure of seeing the on button being pressed and it bursting in to life and watching someone solder something I simply can't do. it is like a meditation for me. It's a mindfulness thing, and it helps slow me down. And I'm wondering, what's it like doing it? As someone who's never going to be able to do it, what do you get out of doing that, out of cleaning these consoles, soldering bits and pieces? What does it do for you?
Yeah, no, exactly the same, exactly the same. And I'm glad that comes across on video, because I'm the same as you. You know, my mind's always going at 100 miles an hour, and I'm a terrible procrastinator, and I get distracted really easily. And when I actually sit down with one of these things in front of me on the desk, it's like I'm fully focused on that. And, you know, I have the end goal in mind, and I know the steps that I need to work through to kind of get there. And it's exactly like you say, it's like a meditative kind of experience, really, just working on these things. And obviously, you know, it kind of feels good at the end that you've got something that was kind of otherwise junk and probably destined to go into landfill. And now it's, you know, you've saved it and helped to save a bit of e-waste, you know, from, you know, being chipped away, and hopefully get some more kind of use out of it as well. So, yeah.
Rhys, I've so enjoyed talking to you. I knew I would, because I love your channel. You have a very...
Thank you.
You are... Here's a weird question. How am I going to phrase this without sounding too weird?
That's fine. I can do weird. Okay. It's no problem at all.
Do you know that you're good? You are really, really good. Again, as someone who's been presenting for 25 years, you know, watching you, you're really, really good at what you do. And I wonder if sometimes you don't recognize that.
You see,
you look quite embarrassed at me saying that.
No, it's... people tell me this. I mean, I suffer from terrible imposter syndrome. I like to. Wow, that's a big one, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm sorry I made you feel uncomfortable.
The response to that should be thank you. That's really kind of you to say.
But, I didn't want to make you uncomfortable at the end. I'm sorry if I have done.
Not at all. Absolutely not at all. No, that's really kind of you to say. I put a lot of work into my channel. As I've been doing it over the course of the past 4 years, I've kind of tried to make small incremental improvements and sort of work on little experiments to improve bits here and bits there. And I guess over time, yes, I have got good at it. And it's all the pieces have kind of come together. But it's nice to hear that. It is, because you tend to focus on the negative, I think, when you put yourself in the public eye, and there's always someone sort of looking to have a go or whatever. So it's nice to hear that. Thank you. Good. That's really
good.
Kind of you.
Well, I'm sorry. I hope I didn't make you feel uncomfortable. That wasn't my intention. I just think when people are good, they should be told they're good. And you're right. You know, you get 199 people saying you're great, one saying you're whatever, and that is the one that tends to stick. I have experience of that. Rhys, I enjoy your channel so much. Where, if people want to find out more, where should they go to see and hear your stuff?
Yeah, so I'm on all the usual social media sites, Control Alt Rhys, that's RWS. I've got a website, it's got Rhys Rambles, which is the podcast/experimental channel where I kind of dump stuff. Just RWS, old computers, whatever. You'll find me. If you move in those particular circles, I'm sure you'll find me easily enough.
Brilliant. So nice to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yes, you too. No, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
It's time for me to thank my fantastic Patreons. If you want to get the show before anyone else, if you want to get it ad-free, if you want your name shouted out, go and have a look at the different tiers I've got. If you're on the Commodore 64 tier, you get your name read out. And if you are on the BBC Micro Model B, you are an executive producer. And let's start with the executive producers, the people who've gone that little bit further. Thank you. Tim Nichols, Mark Gidley and Matt Stanley Evans. You really have, your support is so welcome, and so I'm so grateful for it. Thank you. As I am to Craig Hannon, Harsh Singh, Martin Warren and Sam Hughes for the Commodore 64 tier, and everybody who supported. There are some people on the lower tiers. If that's you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I really hope you're enjoying the show. You can give me feedback, ian@ianlee.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.